This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and I'm joined by Ashley Thornburg because we are still in our spring membership drive, and it's winding down, but every bit as important as it was when we started doing this on Monday. Actually, we started the drive last week, but Ashley and I started doing it on Main Street on Monday. And the reason we're doing this, of course, is to remind you that we are member-supported radio.
We absolutely are. Member revenue is the single biggest source of our revenue stream at Prairie Public, and you can contribute when you call 1-800-359-4145 and give as generously as you can. You know, a lot of people wonder what is the difference between a listener and a contributor? Well, of course, there's kind of the obvious that they made that contribution. But what makes someone want to become a contributor tends to be the deep concern about community. People who tell us time and again that having Prairie Public available is personally important and important to society and care about making it accessible to everyone. We believe that everyone should have access to good information and solid facts and entertainment, and that is why we are here. And we're able to broadcast that because of our member support. The number to call, 1-800-359-4145. You can click and join online at prairiepublic.org or, growing in popularity, the very easy text option where you can text the word support to the number 48 48 48.
And any way you do it, it's important. This is, let's call it an investment. You're listening right now. Invest in the future of your listening experience because this is member supported. That is, it's a business and it requires money to purchase programming, to pay staff, you know, to keep the equipment operating and to fire up the transmitters. It all requires some revenue, and you, are the most important part of our revenue stream. And that's great because this is public radio, and Prairie Public is your public radio service. So invest in your public radio. Invest in your listening future. Give us a call at 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org or try that texting support to 48 48 48.
And when you go from being a listener to a member, you become a difference maker because you are supporting this service and making it available to people who live in this region. You understand that so much of being in a community is being an active member in the community. Maybe you're the type who goes out and helps neighbors mow their lawns or volunteers at the library or what have you. Well, this is just another step in that sort of iteration, the people who are very deeply connected to a sense of community. 1-800-359-4145 is the number to call with your investment. A very popular option is to start off at that $5 a month level. You can call 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848 and help us to stay on the air.
Ashley, just imagine if everybody who listened to Prairie Public was a member.
Oh, I imagine that all the time.
I mean, that would transform
what
this
couldn't
service.
We do?
Yeah, that would really make a huge difference because this is a reflection of the investment of the people who listen and become members. What you hear is what you allow to be heard, frankly, because we are limited by our revenue sources. We've been trimmed from some. We are coming to you and asking you to help make up a bit of that difference. Give us a call, 1-800-359-4145, or go online to prairiepublic.org or text support to 484848. Joining us on Main Street is Danielle Anderson. She is an associate director for the StoryCorps Mobile Tour, which is coming to Bismarck in late June.
Danielle, thanks for joining us today.
Thrilled to be here.
How long are you going to be in Bismarck?
We are going to be here for about a month. So our opening day for recordings is June 28th, and we will record all the way through July 27th.
Well, for those people who aren't acquainted with StoryCorps' wonderful stories that are available online and over the air as well, describe it to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So StoryCorps, we've been around for a long time now, about 15 years. And essentially what we're trying to do is record and preserve the stories of everyday Americans. So we travel around the country and we invite folks into our mobile recording booth, which is housed in an Airstream trailer. And we invite them to sit down with somebody that they care about and share a 40-minute conversation. And that 40-minute conversation can be about any topic of their choosing. And then at the end of that, we give them a copy of it with their permission. We archive it at the Library of Congress so that future generations can hear it. And we also choose a couple of them to edit down and play on the radio to share with folks around the country.
Well, StoryCorps is famous on Fridays during Morning Edition in particular for being sort of a cry fest. What's your line item budget for Kleenex?
That's a great question. We always have them handy in the booth, that's for sure.
So what happens to these recordings if they go to the Library of Congress? Are they there for research or something?
Yeah. So really what it is, we look at it as kind of a repository of just everyday life in America right now. And our hope is that future generations will use these. Not only researchers, but also just everyday Americans can go and listen and hear the stories and voices of, you know, the people that came before them. We also try in every place that we are to leave a local community archive so that folks can hear these stories in a more accessible way. We haven't figured out yet where that's going to be in North Dakota, but we will certainly find one.
Why is that important? What is there in capturing sort of the everyday mundane American experience?
Well, I would question the word mundane. I think that everybody's life is not only interesting, but worth learning from. And I think that the way that we learn history through our schooling, it tends to be top down. We learn the stories of famous people. Mm-hmm. We learn the main events and things like that. But really, history is a ground level thing that's happening every day. And so trying to capture some of that and learn from it, I think, is really valuable.
Do you have guidelines for participants, or do you just say, go in there and fill up 40 minutes?
We do. It's funny. People are often very nervous before they come in, and they're like, there's no way we're going to be able to talk for 40 minutes. And then that 40 minutes is gone. But we do provide resources. So on our website, storycorps.org, we have a long list of questions that cover various topics and themes that people can use to pull from to kind of think about what they want to talk about when they get in there. Mm-hmm. But we do suggest that people only think of, like, you know, come in with a list of maybe 5 to 8 questions and really take those questions and dig in. Like, ask follow-ups. Like, really listen. Don't just kind of ding down your list, but just take time to, you know, delve into things that we don't often have time to do with those we love in our busyness of our everyday lives.
There are permanent booths in Chicago and Atlanta that people can, you know, go into whenever. And then, of course, there's something like what's coming to Bismarck, where it's a mobile tour and people can go in and they walk in. They know they have this 40 minutes. Maybe they've prepared some questions, maybe not. But then StoryCorps provides this facilitator role, and you've been in that role. What does a facilitator do?
So a facilitator does a number of things. On the logistical side, they handle all the technical aspects so participants don't have to worry about that. They make sure the recording equipment is running smoothly. They make sure everything sounds good. But they're also there to kind of walk participants through the experience itself so they feel taken care of. They are there while the recording is taking place. So they may ask follow-up questions. You know, oftentimes when people come in, they know each other really well and they may be telling a story that's very familiar to them. So a facilitator might pop in and be like, hold on, what happened next? Or wait, can you explain who that person was? Or tell me what she looked like, to kind of take that kind of outside ear, you know, thinking in terms of the archive, to have that person there to kind of help people through this experience.
Now, are you looking for what is essentially like a cross-section of the census for where you put this Airstream trailer? Or are you looking – or is it whoever shows up, that's the luck of the draw?
Well, it's a little bit of both. We do hope, though. So while we're here, we'll record somewhere in the range of 150 recordings. And our hope is that those recordings will reflect the community that we're in so that we'll get that cross-section of diversity from all corners of the community. So that's what we hope for, and that's why we work oftentimes with a lot of local community organizations to help us in that area. And we obviously partner with Prairie Public to help us do that as well. And we rely very heavily on you guys.
So when you're done, you've got over 100 hours of stuff. Wow. I mean, that makes us pale a little bit because editing or handling audio can take a little time too.
It absolutely can. But I mean, it really is a wealth of material. And I'm excited, you know, for you guys to have that material as well and see, you know, what happens here at the station with that.
So how can people sign up? It's mid-June-ish that people can start reserving spots?
Yeah, the first release of our appointments will happen on June 14th at 10 a.m. local time, and people can visit our website directly. Again, that's storycorps.org, and they'll also be able to book appointments through the Prairie Public site as well.
Well, in the 21st century, we've got all kinds of technical gadgets and stuff and social media and that, so there's a StoryCorps app now?
There is, yes. So if for some reason you are a Prairie Public listener, but you do not live in Bismarck or are unable to come to our booth while we're there, we do encourage you to download our app. It's available on all smartphones, and that way you can have the StoryCorps experience at your own kitchen table.
You know, I've heard many StoryCorps interviews, and they're compelling, as Ashley mentioned. They can, you know, you can end up in a puddle of tears by the end of them because these are such informed and deep conversations that people are having. But, you know, sometimes people talk about stuff they don't know anything about, you know, like history or – so do you fact check? I mean, what kind of due diligence do you do with all this audio?
Well, so everything goes into the archive as is. So we don't – I mean, that's just what it is. This is how people are representing themselves in their lives, and there's value in that in and of itself, we think. But anything that we broadcast, yes – absolutely. We do lots of fact-checking.
StoryCorps has a number of initiatives. Sometimes they very specifically want to hear from veterans. Why the focus on certain initiatives?
Yeah, sure. So we know that when we go into a community, there are going to be people that are excited to tell their stories. Right. But we also know that there are communities that might be a little bit more hesitant. Maybe they feel like their stories aren't as important or aren't valued, or maybe they just need that extra connection to us. And that's part of the reason that we partner with local organizations and also one of the reasons that we start initiatives. We kind of put some extra resources and staffing behind kind of getting into those communities and creating those connections and, you know, hopefully being that bridge to invite people to, again, tell their story.
Well, StoryCorps is also a reminder that we do have the technology. All we need to do is find the time to do this in our own families. I mean, to ask those people who are the grandparents or the great-grandparents those questions that may never get to be asked if we wait too long.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tremendously important. Oftentimes I will meet people who are like, oh, yes, I wish I could have interviewed my great-grandparent or such and such. And I try to communicate to them that, yes, you wished you'd done that, but you are going to be that person for somebody else someday. So get in here now. Tell your story. There are going to be people that want to hear it.
And again, you get your story, right?
Yes, you do. Participants get a copy of a downloadable digital link to their recording.
Is the younger generation, you know, especially with smartphones and recorders and being very comfortable being recorded and just sort of assume that everything they're saying in a sense is recorded. Have you, I know you haven't been with StoryCorps that long, but have you seen a trend at all in or a generational difference? Like the older generation, oftentimes very aware that wisdom should be passed down, but then sort of the super techie younger generation?
Huh, you know, it's so funny. I thought you were going to go the other way with that.
Oh.
A lot of times younger people are more willing. A lot of times older people are like, ugh, I don't know if I have anything to say or, you know, who would want to listen or – and so it's oftentimes it's those people that we need to do a little bit more. No, trust me.
We're taking pictures of what we're eating and posting them online.
Yeah, everybody cares what I think.
You're here now. It's early May. The project doesn't get going until the end of June. So what are you doing?
So I am here right now to figure out where we are going to park our Airstream. I am here to meet with you guys and get everything rolling and set for our arrival and just to kind of make connections in the local community.
Well, how did you get involved with StoryCorps? You have a degree in Southern Studies.
I do, which is a very odd thing, I know. So I have a master's in Southern Studies from the University of Mississippi. And while I was there, I spent a lot of time doing deep work in oral histories, just kind of looking at – I studied the civil rights movement and just looking at that through the lens of personal on-the-ground experiences and just realizing how important that was and how it changed my perspective and outlook on certain events. And I found StoryCorps that way.
Yeah. Because I bet there's just a lot of things that aren't in the history books, that aren't being in the movies, mm-hmm. and this is actual people.
Yeah, I mean, especially once time has passed, there are stories we tell ourselves, right? This is how something happened. This is how I understand it because it's how it was taught to me in a book. And I think if we can go back and kind of look at those things, like read the letters of people, get those firsthand documents that really show what it was like on the ground in the moment, and that's what we're trying to do right now. You know, things are complicated, right? And we tell stories to ourselves every day. And so just providing a space where people can actually share their story in their own words, I think is just tremendously important.
You know, I went online to get a little orientation about StoryCorps. You've got your own website, of course. It's great. And if you check out Wikipedia, there are those concise descriptions, including this one that I thought was really intriguing. StoryCorps is modeled in spirit and in scope after the efforts of the Works Progress Administration of the 1930s, where we had photographers going around. We had, you know, writers going around to document that time.
Yeah. I think one of the most important elements of what we do is the fact that we are a public service. We are a free service. So therefore, we are accessible, hopefully, to everybody that wants to come and experience it. And I do think that that was modeled on that. Our founder, Dave Isay, was very inspired by that. He was a radio reporter for a long time and did stories. And then there was one story where he decided to hand the mic over to people and said, no, you do the interviews with your grandparents and within your family. And he realized that they didn't need him to tell the story, that they could tell the story on their own. And that oftentimes, if you know the person, you know the questions to ask. You know the follow-ups to ask. And so just kind of taking that WPA model and putting it into people's own hands to tell their stories themselves.
Is there a process for deciding what goes national? Like, does it have to meet certain XXX criteria, or is it just sort of more of a feeling? Because what ends up on Morning Edition is less than 1% of what StoryCorps has recorded.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we have a production team that handles all that. I'm not really in on that side of it. But I will say this. In my time on the road as a facilitator, I facilitated almost 600 recordings, and every single one of them were just carried so much wisdom in them. And it's a little bit sad that such a small fraction makes it to the radio. But just there's so much in there that I think we could potentially edit and broadcast almost every single recording that comes our way.
Well, that same Wikipedia reference that I saw also mentioned Studs Terkel, the late great writer who wrote the book Working, about how people's working lives were complicated, just like everyone would have imagined that. So this model suggests maybe other ways that StoryCorps can, you know, spread its information. Has there ever been a StoryCorps book?
Oh, there's a number of StoryCorps books. Yes. The first one, I believe, is Listening is an Act of Love. And we recently, our last book was about working, specifically stories of work and people's relationship to work. So, yes, please seek those out. They're great.
All right. StoryCorps, it's coming to Bismarck. When does it arrive in Bismarck?
Our opening day is June 28th.
And you'll be there for about a month, right?
About a month till July 27th. We record 5 days a week, so we will be there.
And if people want to sign up, what do they do?
They are going to go to the StoryCorps website, storycorps.org, or the Prairie Public website. On the first release is June 14th at 10 a.m. local time.
Okay. All right, mark your calendars now.
PrairiePublic.org is our website. Danielle Anderson, Associate Director for the StoryCorps Mobile Tour, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And that means it's time to talk about membership again, because we're done talking with Danielle.
Yes, absolutely. But you know what? That membership, that is supporting things like StoryCorps to get an Airstream trailer that is full of high-tech equipment and bring it to the state, because people at StoryCorps are so dedicated to the mission of capturing and telling stories. Well, talking about being dedicated to a mission here, how about Prairie Public being on the air every hour of every day, day in and day out, bringing you information that you need to know to keep your life informed, to stay engaged, even if all you're here for is to have good conversation at dinner parties. Mm-hmm. Here's the number to call to support that, 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join online at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848. And when you do, you are helping pay for another great year of essential programming.
Now, you're probably listening to us try to make the case for you to take the action that we would like you to take, that is to pick up the phone or to go online or to text us here and support Prairie Public. But maybe before you do that, just have a little introspective moment. Think about, why are you listening right now? Is it because you look forward to this service? And if so, if you're listening and you're not a member, is there just a twinge of guilt? And not because, you know, somebody
yeah,
is paying for it.
Me.
You know, somebody is. And maybe you've got to the point now where, you know, I've been listening for a while and I've got a job and I'm doing this and that and things are falling into place. Maybe it's time for me to pay things forward. Maybe help some other listener out there who can't quite get to membership yet. Well, membership is not onerous. It's not expensive. We come in at whatever rate you want to come in at, $5 a month, you know, up to wherever you want to go. It makes a difference, though. That physical act of actually committing yourself to becoming a member makes a difference to Prairie Public. So make a difference for yourself, for everybody else who's listening, and, of course, for Prairie Public. Give us a call, 800-359-4145, online at prairiepublic.org, or text support to 484848.
Believing in public radio means that you believe in the growth and in the health of our community and our society at large. It means that you believe that everyone should have access to this to gain information, because all of that helps you develop as an individual. Our listeners are very much what I would call the omnicurious. We, our listeners, if they want to talk about moths or the history of Boy Scouts or firefighters or brain surgery, I mean, it doesn't matter what topic you want to talk about, you can find a home for it on Prairie Public. We don't speak down to the audience. We recognize the audience's intelligence and curiosity and desire to be more well-informed. We are a mission-driven organization, and you support that mission when you call 1-800-359-4145 or when you click and join at prairiepublic.org or when you text the word support to 484848.
So we are coming to you reminding you that we are member-supported radio. It takes money to run a radio station, and everybody knows that. So this is why we ask you just a couple of times a year, instead of running commercials that, you know, blow all the programming to heck because you can't pick up where you left off every 30 seconds or so. Well, we don't do that here. We do interrupt programming a couple of times a year to remind you that that most important revenue stream to keep Prairie Public going is you. So give us a call, 800-359-4145, or online at prairiepublic.org, or text that wonderful word, support, to 484848. Coming up on Main Street, we'll hear from Mark Trahant. He's got an interesting take on a big development project in northern Minnesota and its effect on a Native American staple. We'll also talk with the gallery director of the Red Door Gallery in Wahpeton, and we'll get a Natural North Dakota essay from Chuck Luhr about the American Avocet. But first, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A change for the Bisman Community Foundation. It was established in 2011 as a permanently endowed fund. Since that time, the foundation has given $140,000 in grants to a number of 501c3 organizations in the Bismarck-Mandan area. It used to be that the foundation awarded a number of small grants, but that will change. Gina Ruby chairs the foundation's advisory committee. She says the idea came from another board member.
How do we utilize this fund in a more impactful way?
So this is what the board came up with.
A BizMan super grant rather than multiple smaller grants. This BizMan super grant for 2018 will be $50,000.
Eligible applicants for the grant will be 501c3 organizations who serve the Bismarck, Mandan, and surrounding area. Ruby says it will be project-based, and she says the first award will come later this year. She says it will be an annual grant.
And because it's an endowment, depending on the earnings, we hope that it will continue to grow as the market grows.
United Way of Cass Clay is increasing their investment into the Red River Children's Advocacy Center. United Way President Christy Huber says the organization is increasing its funding to $100,000 a year for the next 3 years. She says this will help the Red River Children's Advocacy Center to start a program that provides mental health services to children they serve and have been identified as neglected or abused. She says, unfortunately, the need for this kind of care in the community is on the rise.
Last year, there were over 400 children that this program impacted and served, which is just terrifying to know that over 400 children in our community have had this as part of their life. But with the dollars that are now available, we are excited that over 300 children will be able to have access to mental health services very, very quickly. So again, it's about for us as United Way to deploy resources into the community that maximize the effort and the support for research-based comprehensive services to help them succeed.
Huber says this increase in funding coincides with May being Mental Health Awareness Month, as well as National Children's Mental Health Awareness Day taking place this week. And emotional testimony at last night's Fargo School Board meeting regarding a plan to add a separate elementary school designed to help students with severe behavioral problems. It involves remodeling part of Agassiz Woodrow Wilson High School at a cost of $4.3 million and moving students from classrooms to the site. It's a joint project with the West Fargo School District. Parents and some school district staff told the board this plan is the wrong move. Here's parent Samantha Stewart.
This new school scares us. Not only have we not been given proper information for us to be comfortable about it, but this is what we as parents of children with special needs have fought for years against. It's going back in time. I know it's a super hard issue and it's upsetting on many levels. However, removing these kids from their school and simply moving them over to a new building is not what our kids need.
Parent Julie Solberg says her youngest son has been in similar segregated schools, and she says it only worsened his problems.
Instead of spending the money on building and then sending these children to another separate setting or segregated setting, why not spend the money on training for the educators so desperately needed to help these students succeed in their home public district school setting?
School Superintendent Jeff Schatz calls this a complex issue, and if the district doesn't do something now, those issues will continue. After a lengthy discussion, the school board voted 5-4 to proceed with the project. Phase one of the program will start in the fall and is expected to eventually have about 64 students. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Mark Trahant is the Charles R. Johnson Professor of Journalism at the University of North Dakota for a little while longer. Mark will be moving on to another job when the semester ends. He's been named the editor of Indian Country Today and will move to Washington, D.C. Mark is a member of the Bannock Shoshone tribe and the author of a blog called Trahant Reports, which looks at issues from a Native American perspective. Today he comments about a massive project planned for northern Minnesota and its potential to damage a Native dietary staple.
The Minnesota legislature, supported by the mining industry, last week voted to weaken water standards for sulfates in areas where wild rice grows. Wild rice is the essential Ojibwe food. The legislation is not final, and Governor Mark Dayton has not said whether he'll sign or veto the measure. Last month, when the bill was before the House, Representative Peggy Flanagan spoke against weakening the standards. Quote, "If wild rice no longer exists, we no longer exist. This is our home," she said. "We can't go anywhere else. So if Manoman goes away, we go away." Maybe that's the point. Flanagan is White Earth Ojibwe and the Democratic Farm Labor candidate for Lieutenant Governor. Mining companies, as well as northern Minnesota communities, complained that the water standards were too stringent and too expensive. PolyMet Mining Corporation has proposed a copper-nickel plant near Hoyt Lake. The mining permit has not yet been issued. But under the old rules, the company would have had to treat the open pit mine and tailings indefinitely to remove sulfate from the water. According to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that would have cost the company about $1 billion. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has already said it will bring together scientists and policymakers to determine an alternative path forward. And other critics have said that an outright repeal of the water standards could violate the Federal Clean Water Act. One problem is that the old water quality standard was never enforced. Up until now, the standard had maintained that sulfate should not enter wild rice waters in higher quantities than 10 parts per million, says a blog post from Honor the Earth. The new proposed rule would make a different standard for every lake and wetland with wild rice, an unbelievably complicated and costly rule to implement. That is the rule that the Senate proposed be withdrawn. An op-ed by Kevin Dupuis, president of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, and Catherine Hoffman with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy called the legislation a sellout to the very identity of Minnesotans. They wrote, "Tribes and environmental advocates might be the most vocal protectors of wild rice, but we know that the great unifier of Minnesotans is our water. Water is who we are. It is not too late. Minnesotans, lover of wild rice, lakes, and all waters, we must unite to protect our very identity." I'm Mark Trahant.
You can follow Mark Trahant's blog at Trahant Reports. That's T-R-A-H-A-N-T, TrahantReports.com. Next on Main Street, we'll talk about a 2018 Governor's Tourism and Travel Award winner in Wahpeton.
I'm Mark Memmott. A wise editor once wrote that the media and the public should prove that they're lucky to have each other every day. As the Standards and Practices Editor at NPR, my job is to help prove how lucky we are to have you by making sure our reporting is clear and transparent. Now we're asking you to become a new member today. Because when you're lucky to have someone, you don't take them for granted.
1-800-359-4145 or click and join online at prairiepublic.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined now by Noah Dobmeyer. He is the gallery director for the Red Door Art Gallery in Wahpeton. He joins us by phone from the gallery. Hello, Noah.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, and I hope you are as well. Tell us about the Red Door Art Gallery.
The Red Door Art Gallery is what has been called many times the cultural gem of the Twin Towns community of Wahpeton, North Dakota, and Breckenridge, Minnesota. We are located at the heart of downtown Wahpeton at 418 Dakota Avenue in Wahpeton, and we love being a place for the arts in town.
And you recently won the 2018 Governor's Travel and Tourism Award that was called the Flint Firestarter Award for Tourism Development Project. So explain to us how the Red Door Gallery works under that Tourism Development Project mantle.
Well, we are very honored to be this year's recipient. The award goes to an organization that really kickstarts other organizations on Main Street that help develop and flourish Main Street, North Dakota.
So give us some examples. What did the Red Door Art Gallery do for downtown Wahpeton?
As a physical place, a physical home for the arts in the community, the art gallery and the organization that owns the building the art gallery is in, which is Three Rivers Arts Council, helped establish some murals around town, also the sculpture garden around town. We also are Our location helped kickstart some new businesses that are also around us as well. We have two new restaurants in town and a new boutique in town, and then a new ice cream shop as well.
So you are spurring development, I guess. How old is the Red Door Gallery?
The Red Door Art Gallery is 7 years old. We opened in 2011.
And you're in an historic building, right?
Yes, we are. The building is about 100 years old, and it was originally a bank. It was a bank until 1953, and then for a while it was the Chamber of Commerce, then it was a building for a real estate and insurance business, and then it actually sat empty for about 15 to 16 years.
And now, does it also serve as the tourism center?
It is, yes. We are Wahpeton's Visitor Center now. Well, the Convention Visitors Bureau.
That probably got the attention of the Governor's Travel and Tourism Award as well. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about Noah Dobmeyer. Where you come from, and how did you fit into this job?
Well, I grew up in Barnesville, Minnesota, so not too far from Wahpeton. And I have always been involved in the arts and in theater all throughout, ever since I was in fifth grade, really, all through high school and into college. My degree in college was marketing management, and I saw the position as the director of the gallery. The position was requesting a business degree. I do a lot of the business end of the gallery, but it was sort of a perfect fit for me because I did have the business background, but I also had the passion for the arts, which made it best of both worlds for me.
Well, let's talk a bit about the business of an art gallery. How are ongoing operations funded?
We are funded in a few different ways. So we do have the sale of artwork. We're funded in that way. We're also funded through memberships, so individuals and families in the community that make contributions as members of the gallery. We are also funded through corporate sponsorships. There are businesses in town that sponsor the gallery, and then also through the Convention and Visitors Bureau that fund us as the Visitor Center.
Is there any admission charge to go to the gallery?
There is not, no. It is always completely free and open for the public to come in at absolutely no charge. We also have artist receptions, and we have author talks, and we have certain events in the gallery quite often. I'd say at least a few times a month, and those are always open to the public as well.
Well, I note on your website, you've got a Mother's Day gift class coming up. Very timely schedule, Saturday, just in time for Sunday's Mother's Day. Tell us a bit about the gift class.
Yes, that class is completely open and free to the children. Off the top of my head, I believe it's ages 7 through 12. I should know that completely off the top of my head, but I can say with a fair amount of confidence it's ages 7 through 12. And the class is actually in collaboration with Leech Library, which is a library that's just actually across the alleyway behind the gallery. So children will start here, and they will paint terracotta clay pots. Then they'll be taken over to Leech Library, where they will learn how to plant a flower in the pots, and it would be a perfect gift for Mother.
And then you've got an author talk coming up on Tuesday. Give us some background on that.
The author talk is going to be by the author, Janet Gagelin. She has written 4 volumes, 4 books in her book series that's called More Than a Name and a Date. The More Than a Name and a Date book are cemetery stories. So they will give essentially a life story of the people who are at the Old Fairview Cemetery in Wahpeton and then also surrounding cemeteries as well.
And finally, a week from Saturday on the 19th of May, Iris and Daylilies, I Have Known and Loved, a garden talk.
Yes, so that is going to be, the name of it is, again, Iris and Daylilies, I Have Known and Loved. The slideshow garden presentation is by Carawan Moffitt. That is Saturday, May 19th at 10 a.m. in the gallery classroom, and that is completely free and open for all to come and enjoy. And all the events that we've talked about have been completely free and open to the public.
And these 3 things we've talked about aren't art hanging on the wall. There are other activities that are available at the Red Door Art Gallery in downtown Wahpeton. So yeah, there's a lot of programming involved here, I take it.
Yes, and that is one of our goals, and part of our mission is to provide programming for the community.
And the interest in the arts, is the Red Door a sort of a magnet, do you think? Is it made the art more visible, made people more interested in the arts in Wahpeton?
I would say that it has. I think that it's very helpful that there was a physical home for the arts now in Wahpeton. And sometimes we'll have people come in and say, oh, I've only been here once before, or this is my first time stopping in. And they'll say, wow, you know, it's great to see the art and the culture that we have in our small town.
Well, this 1915 refurbished National Bank building is emblematic of things that are happening in other communities across the state. Fargo's, of course, been fixing up old buildings now for quite a while. Is this happening in Wahpeton, too?
It has been, yes, as was mentioned a little bit earlier with the Flint Firestarter Award that we won. There are a lot of new businesses, a lot of new restaurants, new stores that are coming in. We have a new boutique. We have a new ice cream shop, two new restaurants, and we had right across the street from the gallery, we had a JCPenney store that closed, but there's now a new store called the Golden Rule. So there really are a lot of new things coming into town, which is really fun to see.
And is it attracting more people downtown?
I'd say it is. I'd say recently, in the last couple weeks alone, I've noticed more people coming in at looking for the visitor center, looking for travel guide and travel information.
Now, the gallery requires people to be there when it's open. I assume it's open roughly the same time as the tourism center. So you need volunteers?
We do, yes. We have about 40 volunteers between our board members, our committee members, and our volunteers that help us with day-to-day operations. Without our volunteers, we really couldn't exist. And our volunteers are the most hardworking and selfless people ever, and we're so lucky to have.
Well, how many do you need?
I'd say 40 is a good amount, but we're always looking for more. So if anyone is interested, you can definitely reach out to us, give us a call or an email, or go on our website.
Now, with all that development downtown, the Red Door Gallery and that refurbished building, other buildings being repurposed in the downtown area, are people moving downtown too?
I would say so, yes. There is living opportunities downtown, and I would say that those living opportunities are being taken advantage of.
Hmm. So what's your vision for the Red Door Art Gallery, say, 5 or 10 years down the road?
My vision would be a gallery where we could have a larger staff, where we could provide even more events, where we could easily be offering 10 events a month, where we offer lots of programming to the community, a lot more classes, a lot more opportunity for the youth and teens to get involved, and a place that people are very happy that we have in our community and love coming to.
Is it a destination place in the sense that somebody might want to have a wedding there or some kind of a celebration of some sort?
It is, yes. We have had weddings here in the past, and that having the kind of destination go-to place would be a great vision for us to work towards in the next 5-10 years.
All right. Well, Noah, best of luck to you and the Red Door Art Gallery. The Red Door just won the 2018 Governor's Travel and Tourism Award, this one titled the Flint Firestarter Award for a Tourism Development Project. Noah Dobmeier is the gallery director. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Prairie Public Spring Member Drive is winding down, but we could still use some help. Now, if you've already contributed during this drive, thank you so much. If you have not, well, no time like the present. And here's a little extra incentive for you. If you make that contribution by 9 a.m. Central, that's 8 o'clock Mountain, on Thursday morning, you will automatically be entered to win a $400 gift card to the fabulous and stylish Hotel Donaldson in downtown Fargo. So please do your part and invest in the statewide network that brings you NPR news every day by contributing what you can at prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145. And yeah, we'll put your name in the hat for that $400 gift card to the artist-inspired and luxurious Hodo in Fargo. 800-359-4145, prairiepublic.org, and thank you.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. North Dakota is a four-season state. And after a long, hard winter, spring is a very welcome change of season. It isn't just the temperature of the air and the color of the terrain that changes. Wildlife emerges from winter shelter or migrates to its North Dakota habitat. Chuck Lura is the author and voice of Natural North Dakota, and today he's welcoming the return of a shorebird.
As we travel about North Dakota during the spring, the lakes, marshes, and temporary potholes in the fields are often a hub of avian activity. Ducks, geese, and a wide variety of shorebirds are busy feeding and doing the all-important work of getting their next generation off to a good start. One of the more conspicuous and intriguing shorebirds we see is the American avocet. Many of you have no doubt noticed some larger, long-legged shorebirds wading through the shallow water of marshes and potholes during the spring and early summer, standing about a foot and a half tall. The head and neck is a rusty to reddish-pink color, while the body is a black and white. And here's a really interesting and major identification characteristic. They have a long, upturned bill. It's also interesting to note that avocets have webbed feet, but we seldom get to see them. This interesting and colorful bird is the American avocet, or Recurvirostra americana. The genus name, Recurvirostra, is an obvious reference to the upturned bill, and the epithet implies that the bird is of the Americas. The American avocet is, however, a western species, found mainly west of the Mississippi River. Although the avocet has been documented to breed over much of the state, it's mostly observed north and east of the Missouri River. They're often observed in our region on prairie potholes, semi-permanent wetlands feeding on aquatic invertebrates in shallow water, mud flats, and sparsely vegetated shorelines. Avocets can also be observed poking and prodding their bill in the shallow water. But they're noted for feeding in the shallow water alone or in groups by sweeping their bills in a side-to-side motion as they walk slowly forward. The avocet's breeding season runs from May to July. They're ground nesters and often nest in small colonies. Females will lay 3 to 4 eggs in a small scrape in the ground, often on or near a shoreline. The nest may be simple scrape or perhaps lined with some feathers, vegetation, or other material. Many avocet populations in the western United States are doing well. Wetland drainage has reduced shallow water habitats. However, in the last decade or so, their populations in some areas are now increasing. Perhaps the habitat in the remaining wetlands better suits their needs. I'm Chuck Lara.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center and Dakota College at Bottineau. You can read and hear today's story at prairiepublic.org.
Well, it's time to ask our listeners if they're members again, Ashley.
Yes, and why do we do that? Well, it is because this is our membership drive. We come to you a couple times a year instead of airing commercials during the year, which is a very lucrative business model. We kind of chose the opposite path and instead ask our listeners to become members and help out. And it is a very simple process. Typically starts with a phone call or a couple minutes on your computer or your smartphone. You can text the word support to 484848, or you can go online to prairiepublic.org, or you can call 1-800-359-4145. And from there, we just need a little bit of information, your name, your address, how much you want to give, how much fits in your budget, how much you think this service is worth to you. And then after that, the rest is up to you if you want to leave comments. So many people take advantage of this direct line into Prairie Public to say, I love Away With Words, or how could you possibly take Car Talk off the air? Whatever is your reason to support, whatever you have to say, we want to hear it. When you call 1-800-359-4145, click and join at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848.
We are a news and information and entertainment service, and we think we occasionally, you know, make your intellects vibrate a bit more actively because we put stuff out there that is intriguing, different. You won't hear it someplace else. And as Ashley mentioned, we're interactive in a way, especially around membership drives, because when you contact us, one of the questions we ask is, do you have anything that you want to tell us about what we do? Do you have any comments? And those comments are distributed to the rest of us after the drive. We look at them with great interest because we are interested in what listeners are saying about us. They might call us with show ideas sometimes. They might say, I don't like this show. I don't like that particular approach. I don't like this or that, or I love that. So we're interactive public radio. Think of us as your old-fashioned social media in a way, but we've got the fancy stuff too. We've got the online presence. We've got the text capabilities. We've got a Facebook presence, but we also broadcast that old radio signal all over the state of North Dakota, and that's made possible by people like you who've picked up the phone and called us at 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org or texting, that 21st century thing that you can text support to 484848.
It really is that simple, and it is important that you support Prairie Public right now because you are making it possible for us to continue to be on the air. 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848. Think about the meaningful stories that you hear on a segment like StoryCorps every Friday morning on Morning Edition. The music discovery that you have with Mike Olson and with Scott Prebis. Those are both local to Prairie Public. And then, of course, we have World Cafe, which is a national program. And Chris Thiele, with Live From Here, just incredibly talented musician. And then you are kept entertained with shows like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And really the deep dive into what's going on around us with shows like Reveal and Radiolab. You are supporting that when you call 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 9th. Like any early town, Hatton, North Dakota had its share of fires. In 1915, there were two, just 3 weeks apart. The first involved the gas lighting at a hotel that caused an explosion and fire that destroyed seven businesses and cost more than $50,000. Those buildings included the hotel, a harness shop, a cafe, shoe shop, and post office. The fire started in the afternoon and raged for several hours. 19 days later, Hatton's mill burned down with damages of $17,000. The town's next fire was more destructive. On this date in 1923, the fire gutted a whole block in Hatton except for a bank and hardware store, both of which were brick buildings. The fire started in the basement of a general store and spread quickly to the rest of the block. Fire departments from Hatton, Mayville, and Northwood responded. Northwood brought water and kept the fire from spreading to businesses on neighboring blocks. Mayville had its chemical engine ready and watched to keep the fire from reaching nearby homes. The fire was the worst Hatton had ever seen, leaving the block a mass of ruins. 13 businesses had burned, a clothing store, a general store, a bank, two women's hat makers, a restaurant, pool hall, confectioners, creamers, and livery. The damage estimate was over $150,000. Insurance was expected to cover about half. The cause of the fire wasn't known, but the general store's furnace had been lit for about an hour before the fire began. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
And that warm voice of Merrill Pepcorn doing Dakota Datebook, you know, that's a very popular feature from Prairie Public, and it's something that you can get online. If you go to prairiepublic.org, you can actually access this information. And it's part of the wealth of resources we offer our listeners. Our online presence is always there, prairiepublic.org, the radio tab is up there. You can access Main Street and other programs that you hear regularly on our air. So that's another reason to give us a call, 800-359-4145, or online at prairiepublic.org. Well, Thursday on Main Spring, I'm thinking about. It's time for horticulturist Ron Smith to answer your lawn and garden questions, and you can email those right now by emailing mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. And we'll have our What's Happening calendar of events as well tomorrow. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.